next on AM 1480 WLEA, the Newsmaker Show. Here's Ryan O'Neill.
So glad to have with us Alfred State history professor, Professor Nick Wadi. Professor Wadi, thanks for calling in.
It's great to be back, Ryan.
Well, Professor Wadi, I have some interesting clips here. This is Rush Limbaugh. Now, Rush here is, this is from yesterday's show. Rush Limbaugh here talking about Sean Hannity and the media. And he's just been, we won't play the media montage, but I do want to play Rush Limbaugh here. And he's just finished up playing a clip of a bunch, clips of a bunch of reporters and anchors and commentators criticizing Sean Hannity. How dare a friend of the president's use the same lawyer? And Limbaugh points out all the conflicts of those who have just spoken. Again, we won't hear those people, but the commentators who spoke. But I want you to hear what Limbaugh says.
Okay, let's go. There's the first voice with Jackie Kucinich. I'm not going to call this a conflict, but you should know that she's the daughter of former Democrat Congressman Dennis Kucinich. She's in the drive-by media, Daily Beast. Jake Tapper was the next voice. Jake Tapper, 1992, served as campaign press secretary for Democrat congressional candidate Marjorie Margolis Mizvinsky, who is, wait for it, the mother-in-law of Chelsea Clinton. In 1997, Jake Tapper was a spokesman for Handgun Control, a gun control advocacy group. CNN and Tapper failed to disclose Tapper's anti-gun activism in advance of the town hall that he hosted with the Parkland students. Did any of you know any of this? Why wasn't Tapper forced to disclose that he holds an anti-gun bias while hosting a town hall made up of anti-gun bias?
And it goes on and on. It went on for a couple of minutes. Actually, it went on for almost a half, the first half hour of Rush Limbaugh's show, come to think of it. Professor Wadi, I want to get your reaction to what Limbaugh said there.
Well, it's certainly true that Sean Hannity has become an extremely popular punching bag. I mean, everyone who's on the left loves to hate Sean Hannity, and I can see why. He's you know, a pretty glib. And
well, you know, if you listen to Hannity's explanation, Sean Hannity says he did not even hire the attorney. He said he just is, it's a lawyer that he talks to a lot. And anybody who knows lawyers can tell you, or lawyers can tell you, you know, free legal advice off the cuff in the middle of a conversation, that's that kind of thing comes up all the time, Nick.
Sure. Right. Yeah. And I read a very good article earlier in the week about this raid on Trump's attorney and how it can very arguably be seen as prosecutorial abuse. I think there are some very serious questions about it, but, you know, throwing everything but the kitchen sink at Trump and at Hannity, I guess, is par for the course these days. But
if I could, Professor Nick Wadi, I want to play another clip. This is Brian Kilmeade talking about this.
Okay.
But we have so many lawyers walking through our building who are also on television. I ask them stuff legal all the time, but they don't charge me. They never charge Sean. So that ended up being the fixation of the whole trial. Yeah, I know it's a surprise and sensational because he's a famous name. But then get over it and get to the actual story. I think that's the most important. At least I used to think that was the most important.
Now, that just, you know, a lot of people are saying that. It's common sense. Somebody's in the middle of having a conversation with a lawyer. You know, they're trying to make, it's kind of innuendo, the way they say that. Isn't this, you know, Sean Hannity has been talking to Michael Cohen as if Michael Cohen is a criminal attorney, as if Donald Trump is in the mafia. Isn't there something that's kind of smear-mongering about this, Professor Wadi?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when there's no there, innuendo is all you've got. And what seems to be behind this whole Cohen thing is this theory that him paying women to be silent about their accusations against President Trump is itself a crime, and there's just no truth to that either. So
no truth to
to the idea that paying someone to be silent about something or to sign a non-disclosure agreement is illegal. That's the whole theory here.
Well, you know, if you think about the whole Stormy Daniels thing, that's kind of blackmail to start with, isn't it? To go up to a rich married guy and say, okay, we had an affair, and if I don't get paid right now, your wife's going to know about it. What's so virtuous about that?
Yeah, well, you're right. It is potentially blackmail, especially given the timing. Someone's about to potentially be elected president, and you say you're going to say such and such about him. I mean, you can see why you would pay such a person to be silent, because that's a critical moment, and you don't need that kind of distraction. But the basic concept of forcing someone to do something they don't want to do, because if you say if they don't, you will reveal damaging information about them. And I think the credibility of Stormy Daniels herself is not particularly great. So I think what Trump's attorney did in trying his best to get this woman to stay silent right before the election is what any good lawyer would do in that situation. And not consulting Trump at that time was also what any good lawyer would do in that situation. And I don't think any of it proves by any means that Trump did have an affair with her, because his interest in suppressing the accusation is the same whether he had the affair or not.
Now, this is Arthur Idella. He's an attorney who appeared on the Brian Kilmeade show yesterday, and he talked about Hannity's right to privacy in this situation.
Sean Hannity has a right that the whole world doesn't need to know that he's buying a house, you know, somewhere for X amount of money. Or maybe it's his last will and testament. How about something that personal? Does Sean Hannity want everybody to know, you know, who he's leaving what to, you know, 1,000 years from now when he passes away? So, you know, but short of that, Brian, if there's no paperwork in his office, in Michael Cohen's office, I really don't know why he threw Sean's name into the mix.
Professor Waddy, your reaction?
The only reason to do this raid in the first place and to begin to put this contrived legal pressure on Michael Cohen is to dig up dirt on, you know, if they dig up dirt on Sean Hannity, I guess that's a win-win for them. But mainly they want dirt on President Trump. And what will they find? I have no idea. But that's what's at the heart of this. It's character assassination. And you know, where is Russia collusion? We've gone so far off those rails that, I mean, it's not even funny anymore. So I said before, I think it's a sign of desperation. And I think it's also ruining the credibility of the Mueller investigation even more than has already been the case. So some people think that Mueller is sort of trying to bait Trump into firing him or into overreacting in a way that could produce impeachment in a way that Mueller himself can't. So I don't know what Mueller is thinking, but he's certainly doing everything in his power to get under Trump's skin. And if I were Trump, I'd be hopping mad too. There may not be much he can do about it, but that's for him to decide.
The Comey book came out this week, and we're talking to Alfred State History Professor Nick Waddy. The Comey book is out this week. This is Chris Starwalt. Again, audio here from the Brian Kilmeade radio show. Chris Starwalt on Comey.
Who cares whether the president tans? Who cares? If you...
And he's Starwalt here talking about things in Comey's book.
Who cares whether the president tans? Who cares? If you want to hold yourself out as Elliot Ness, right? If you want to hold yourself out as, or actually in his case, it's beyond that. He portrayed himself in the Lynch Justice Department as the last honest man, that the department was so compromised and so corrupt that only he, El Coro, only he, Comey, could dispassionately and reasonably execute justice on matters that relate to a live election. And his arrogance in doing those things, in shaping the outcome of the 2016 election, not once but twice at least, maybe a third time if it is in not disclosing about Russia stuff, the things that he decided that he needed to disclose and not disclose, things to leak and not leak, do and not do, it is carried forward in very lavish fashion when we look at how he's conducting this book tour and what the book says.
Professor Waddy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was ever a man who did not belong as FBI director, it's James Comey. I mean, man, he has exposed himself as a partisan and as a pretty strange man who's got some very flawed judgment. But if you ask me, the one decent thing James Comey ever did was to reopen the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails because new evidence emerged, and he sent a letter to the Congress telling them that he was doing it, and that was his duty. And in that case, he did his duty. But I think it's pretty clear that when it came to investigating Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, when it came to objectively analyzing the information that came out of Christopher Steele and the dossier and using that in an appropriate way with the FISA warrants, I mean, there are so many serious questions surrounding James Comey, and we're not even getting into the leaking, which is also a violation of the law. I think Trump is right that James Comey ought to be in serious legal jeopardy, and I hope someone in the Justice Department is investigating him, and maybe that's how his book tour will end.
Do you see Attorney General Jeff Sessions ever moving in that direction, Nick Waddy?
Well, it's hard to know. He keeps things close to the vest. Supposedly leaking is taken quite seriously by Sessions, and he has brought charges against some people for leaking. And Comey has essentially admitted to leaking. He's admitted to a crime. So how anyone could not be investigating that or considering legal action against Comey would boggle my mind. So I sure hope that if Sessions isn't doing it, there's a U.S. attorney somewhere who is.
Talking to Alfred State history professor, Professor Nick Waddy. Professor Waddy, did you see... you know what? I'm late on a break. Let me take a break. We'll be right back. Okay, Professor?
Okay.
Be right back with you, and we'll have the weather before that. Stay with us.
Join us for the greatest show and tell in the region. It's the Southern Tier's third annual Twin Tiers Maker Expo at Wellsville Elementary School, Saturday, April 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Again, this year, it's free for both participants and visitors. Children under the age of 13 must bring an adult. The Makers Expo allows our students to showcase their talents. This year's Maker Expo is anticipating over 125 exhibits with at least 1,000 in attendance. There will be plenty of door prizes given away throughout the day. Remember, the Twin Tiers Maker Expo, Saturday, April 21st, starting at 9 a.m. at the Wellsville Elementary School, 5098 School Street.
It's that time of year again. Time for the 5th annual Wildflower Arts and Crafts Festival. And this year, we'll be welcoming a very special guest, the new Hornell Partners for Growth director, Justin Rechtenwald.
Thank you, Shelley. And on top of that, we'll have great arts and craft vendors and some amazing local music by Deonza McCool and the Meat Cutters Union. And we'll also be partnering with Catholic Charities for their annual Step Walk.
The annual Wildflower Festival will be taking place Saturday, May 5th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 1 Steuben Square in Hornell. We are still accepting handmade and homemade vendors. If you'd like more details, please check out our website at hornellhpg.com.
And as always, thank you for shopping local.
Checking in now with meteorologist Rob Carolyn. Rob, what can you say this morning?
I can't say it's the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning of winter. We're seeing the pattern showing some signs of kind of slowly relaxing over the next 2 weeks. So while it doesn't become blazingly warm, it looks like the cold may start to relax, and we may start talking a little bit less about snow than we have been. That certainly would be a welcome change. Brian, the sun came up this morning at 6:23. It'll set tonight at 7:56. For today, it looks like we're going to see a lot of cloudiness, and I can't rule out a passing rain or snow shower today. Temperatures will make their way up to about 45 to 50. Now, there's a storm in the central United States that's actually producing snow in the areas that were hit by a blizzard this past weekend. It's snowing pretty good right now in southeastern South Dakota, northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. That low tracks our way tonight. We'll see some rain develop. It's going to mix with and change the snow overnight, 30 to 35. Brian, the snow will taper off to scattered snow showers tomorrow, but not before we pick up about a 1 to 2-inch accumulation, especially on the grass. It's breezy, cool tomorrow, 40 to 45. Scattered snow showers tomorrow night, 30. Chance of snow showers on Friday, breezy, 40 to 45. The good news is sunshine develops during the weekend. Temperatures will be in the 40s Saturday, 50s on Sunday, and some of that sun may actually hang around into next week.
Alfred State, professor of history, Professor Nick Waddy with us today. Professor Waddy, yesterday the Supreme Court ruled against President Donald Trump on deporting immigrants there. Neil Gorsuch was the tiebreaker there. He voted with the liberals there. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's disappointing, and it's being trumpeted by the left as a victory, but I think people might be somewhat overinterpreting it, because as I understand it, the ruling says that this law, which basically mandates the deportation of violent criminals, needs clarification. They're not saying the concept is itself unconstitutional. And that doesn't mean that violent criminals can't continue to be deported, because even if it's not mandated that they be deported, President Trump has the discretion as commander-in-chief to decide to deport them. So I think the real impact of this ruling is likely to be a lot less than it appears at first glance. But I think, you know, Gorsuch may have been making his decision on sort of procedural legal grounds rather than, I don't think it's a statement that Gorsuch is against the deportation of violent criminals, because, you know, frankly, at least on paper, there aren't many people who are. So I don't think it's as serious as it seems.
Professor Waddy, if you follow the news about the boycotts against Laura Ingraham and whatnot, and Fox came out and said that they were going to stand by Laura Ingraham on them in spite of a couple dozen sponsors who walked away from the Laura Ingraham show. The latest on that is that Parkland school shooter survivor David Hogg says he's got another boycott coming up later in the week. He said he was going to announce it on Saturday.
Well, it doesn't surprise me in the least. I mean, he's got a rush of power at this point, and he's probably thinking he can destroy or at least damage pretty much anyone he likes. And the truth is, he's right. He's got the bully pulpit, and he can organize a great number of people to send angry emails and put pressure on corporate sponsors, and that has an impact. This is how corporate America reacts, unfortunately, and when liberals put pressure on corporations, the corporations tend to cave, and it's distressing. I've been saying on my blog that conservatives need to wake up. They need to start speaking out, and that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and if we don't make our views heard, corporate America will steamroll us.
Looking at now and reading off some of the quotes here from David Hogg's Twitter page. If you want to make your voice heard, he says, call any of these numbers and ask Paul Ryan to allow a vote on universal background checks. And then he gives a list of congressional numbers.
Well, you know, it's notoriety. Once you have notoriety, once you have a platform, you can say whatever you want. And, you know, David Hogg is not an expert on gun safety. He's not an expert on anything. He's a victim of a tragedy, but I've said it before, that doesn't make him right. It makes him someone who people will listen to, and that gives him power. He should be careful about how he exercises that power, though. And I think, you know, he's veering into terrain that he's gonna be very fiercely criticized. He already has been, and that goes with the territory. So he's an adult now, and he needs to start making adult decisions, and he'll be accountable for them.
We've been talking to Alfred State Professor Nick Waddy. Professor Waddy, was there any topics I did not bring up that you wanted to?
Well, I suppose we are seeing further movement from the Chinese, that they're willing to make additional concessions on trade. That whole situation is still percolating, and we'll have to wait and see whether we get real justice from the Chinese on trade, but there's some hopeful signs. There's the Syria situation. I mean, you could go in any number of different directions there. It's hard to know what the best course of action in Syria is, but the president's certainly been strongly criticized for the strikes that occurred there, and that's not surprising because he's Trump after all, but nothing else comes to mind.
Professor Waddy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.